When you start a business, you start it with the goal of doing what you say you're going to do. Peer pressure isn't always a bad thing. Our mission is to make it easier to be a business.
Twenty 20% of small businesses will fail within their first year. 50% would have failed by year five. And the key to survival in that rough terrain is a lot about financial strategy, but as our next guest proves, it's also about prioritizing mental and physical health and building a strong company culture. Today's guest, Matt Tate, knows the challenges of small business building firsthand. Welcome to Venture Visionaries, the podcast where we dive into the strategies of leaders shaping the future of business. I'm your host, Thomas Igemet. And today's guest, Matt, is a serial entrepreneur, former attorney, and the founder of Decimal, a financial operations company that's unlocking real-time insights for businesses through better and faster financials. In this episode, we're going to explore Matt's journey from law to entrepreneurship, his insights on the messy middle of business growth, and how company culture and mental health play a crucial role in leadership. Whether you're scaling your own startup or navigating the complexities of leadership, you're in for a valuable conversation. Let's get started. I'm curious if you had any specific childhood experiences or early role models who you think really shaped your career path or the leader that you found yourself becoming.
That's a great question. And you know, for me, I actually grew up in a family of entrepreneurs. This last Labor Day, we did a family reunion and there were 60 people there. Out of the 60 people, 12 were either running their own company or had run a large organization. And that's a significant percentage. I grew up in it. My dad was a builder here in Indianapolis where I live. So a small business owner. My grandpa also had a variety of companies as well. And I spent a lot of my childhood, from the age 7, I was throwing bricks into dumpsters. So working around small businesses and around the industries that they serve, ultimately, that's what led me to where I am today. And even each step along my path was very much about, I saw how hard it was to be a small business owner. And yet I wanted to be a business owner myself that served other business owners. And my mission throughout my career and even today at Decimal is just to make it easier to be a business. And that all started with how I grew up. And I would say that the family that I grew up in has kind of continued that through to today.
What makes being a business owner so difficult? And of that set of challenges, what are the ones you find yourself most passionate about helping solve?
I think there's a lot. There's the tactical side, and then there is the mental and emotional side. From a tactical side, when you start a business, you start it with the goal of doing what you say you're going to do. If you're going to be a marketer, I want to help people with marketing. If you're going to be a technology company, your technology is going to serve that need. If you're going to be an accounting company, you're going to do accounting. The difference is, and I think where a lot of the pain and problems come from is there's a lot baked into running a company that's not that singular mission. You have to do HR. You have to do IT. You have to do accounting. Those are what I joke are the three worst things about running any company because they make you feel like you're moving backwards. Mm-hmm. You know, when your computer breaks, you're angry not just because you have to deal with it, but you're irritated because you can't do the other things you were planning on doing. Those are the things that I think make it tactically very hard to run a business. Those are also not the things that you're typically trained on. You know, if you work your way up as a marketer, you're doing marketing. You're not trained on how to do the bookkeeping. You're not trained on how to have employees and hire and fire correctly or to truly build a culture. And I think that's what tactically makes being a business owner hard. Mm. The other things are the mental and emotional state. The larger your business becomes, the more isolating it is to be a leader, to be a CEO and a boss. I'm lucky enough that I founded this current company, Decimal, with a co-founder. But as we've grown from 0 to 80 employees, there's a lot that I can no longer confide in him on a daily basis. I'm on an island. And it's why I talk a lot with other business owners and on podcasts about the importance of, number one, as a business owner, focusing on your mental health and physical health. Number two is finding a peer group, a group of people that are doing a similar job that you can have a community with. Mm. And three, if you want to grow and grow yourself, finding a coach that you can pay to help you to grow as a person and as a leader.
How do you describe the value that Decimal seeks to provide? Why is that so important to you? And why do you think it needs to be important to your current and future potential clients?
That's a great question. I think, you know, we mentioned accounting. As a business owner, you have to pay the bills, get paid, and track it all to exist as a company. It's why I love this business. It's in the have to do category. And it's a boring thing that's not typically serviced very well by hiring people or by traditional accounting firms. And so that's what we do. We help our clients pay their bills, get paid, track it all, file their taxes, just kind of the nuts and bolts that you have to do. And I'm passionate about that. And I'm passionate about the back office of our mission is to make it easier to be a business. And we do that through accounting. We also do that through normalizing the journey of being a business owner. And that I think is really important. And so for us as Decimal, if we can take one of those hard things that you don't want to do away from you, you can focus more on what you have a passion for, because very few people truly have a passion for accounting.
What got you to make the shift from law to entrepreneurship? What are some of the things you think you picked up from your law background that have actually found their way into how you think about running Decimal?
Those are good questions. And what I would say is it wasn't a detour. It was a very intentional move. I mentioned my dad and my grandpa ran and owned small businesses. Yeah. When I asked them both what they thought I should do to start my career, I said, hey, I want to run my own business someday and I'm going to be an entrepreneur too. I said, great, go to law school. It'll save you a hell of a lot of money on legal fees. They weren't wrong. It's been a very beneficial thing. Also, what law school and what practicing as a lawyer teaches you is how to disseminate large amounts of information very quickly and to synthesize those into multiple options and optionality. And that has served me very well. And Decimal is now my third company in just growing businesses, understanding and weighing risks and opportunities. And it was very valuable. And I would be totally remiss if I didn't say that law school was 100% beneficial because I met my wife there. She is a real lawyer. At the very least, that's why I'm glad I did it. I would say that all of this was part of a well-crafted plan. Now, like every plan, it's gone off the rails a million different times. I'm glad I did it. I'm still a practicing attorney. I would just tell you never to take legal advice from me because I was a really bad lawyer.
That's hilarious. Somehow I find that hard to believe, given how successful you've been at other things. As you think about giving that advice to somebody else who's starting off, would you advise them down the same path?
So I'd throw that into two buckets. Number one, for me, I do think that there are cheaper and quicker ways to achieve the same goal. And it's interesting. We hired a guy a couple of years ago and super smart, just generalist right out of college. And he wants to run his own business. And I said, great, come work for us for a few years. And here's why. I think that it's really important at the beginning of your career to pick up as many tools as you can so that when you ultimately jump to running a company, you're as equipped as possible to do that. You're going to learn a lot. I'm sure like you have, and I have, where every boss, every company I've worked in and worked for, I learn things I like and I learn things I don't like. And I'm also humble enough to know as a now a parent, and I've got three little kids, that sometimes the things that I say I'll never do, I absolutely end up doing. Mm-hmm. It's like I used to promise and swear that I would never tell my kids because I said so. And after the 430th why in a 3-minute period, eventually it just comes out as because I said so. I would correlate a lot of being a boss and running a fast growing company to there are certain things that I swore I would never do that I learned from other bosses that I now definitely do.
Do you have an example of one of those things that you kind of learned from experience the importance of, even though they initially felt like that's something I never want to do?
I am an introvert by nature. I do extroverted things like get on podcasts and do group meetings and stuff because they're good for us and they're good for the company. But after a full day of podcasting or being an extrovert, all I want to do is sit on the couch quietly and read. I need to recharge or to do something that recharges me. What I learned from a past boss is that doing a group all hands as a company, even if you don't feel like it's impactful just to be up there and to be transparent. ultimately, what I think has helped me is I'm a very transparent and open book. What I have learned is there are some things to be transparent about, and there are other things that you shouldn't necessarily be transparent about. And that's what I've learned through making mistakes, and I make a lot of them, ultimately as a leader.
You have a very specific way that you define the messy middle, and you define that as the phase of growing a business from about 1 to 50 million. And you, and my understanding is like, that's where Decimal finds its sweet spot. Can you explain to me why that 1 to 50 is such a messy middle?
Well, I think for me, having spent my career around businesses, having now helped over 1,000 companies at Decimal, what I've learned is there are kind of three general phases to a business. Phase one is startup phase. I love that phase. You have an idea, you're trying to get traction, and you're just kind of doing whatever it takes to figure out how to make it into a real business. Turn an idea into a company. That next phase that I call the messy middle is what other people call scaling. What I found is for somebody like me who loves the startup phase is a lot of what you enjoy and what you're good at, you have to totally throw out the window and you have to adapt as a leader in the scaling phase to do things differently. For instance, like a lot of startup phases is not about putting in processes, it's about being fluid to find growth. But then to scale, you have to put in processes. And that's messy for a lot of entrepreneurs because it's not a skill set that helped get them to that point. They need to, and we need to do a couple of different things. One is adapt and evolve into being able to scale. Mm-hmm. And two, that's also where you have to start bringing in and hiring people who have different skill sets and core competencies to you. And that's also hard because tactically it's hard because you're doing things differently and you have to change how you were doing them to continue to do them better and grow. And then mentally and emotionally, that's tough because you have to be humble enough to recognize that you need to change as a leader and that you need to bring in people that are different from you and compliment you and may disagree with you. And those are things that can be tough on people. And the longer you go through it, the more you have to run into tough and hard decisions. One of the hardest ones that I found as we've grown at Decimal is there are certain people that were amazing at certain phases of the company. Mm. Then as we grew, weren't suited for the next phase of growth. And that means that sometimes the people that you have spent years around or become friends with no longer have a true growing place at the company, and you have to make hard decisions. And that's also mentally and emotionally hard as a leader. And then if you have to pivot or change, it's harder to do. In that startup phase, it's super easy. And then that third phase that everybody kind of dreams of getting to if you're in high growth is the enterprise phase of like, this business is a going concern. It's almost too big to fail. It's a big business. But I truly like that messy middle of scaling because I think that's where the evolution of people comes into play the most.
One other thing that differentiates you and your approach is you're pretty forward about the value-based approach that you believe differentiates your work. How does that differentiate how you approach things to others in your industry? And why was that important for you?
For the first year and a half of Decimal, we did not write down company values. And I strongly believe that every business needs to be allowed to grow up and figure out its own identity before you can truly enumerate the core values of the business. For me, particularly growing a remote company, Decimal is 80 plus people, 27 states, 5 countries. You have to have a core foundation of who you are as a business. Mm. What is your identity? And for us, culture is a big differentiator. I mean, we're in a space that bookkeeping is bookkeeping. Bill pay is bill pay. So how are we different? We've got a lot of reasons, but one of them is the culture of the people that we have on our team and the culture of Decimal. And how we embody that is through our core values. How I embody that as a leader is by talking about them and really stitching them into every fiber of the company. Mm. And we have 4 core values. Number 1, do the right thing. Number 2, default to transparency. Number 3, move fast, make things better. And number 4, we're in a competition, so win together. For me, that's what helps you make decisions as a business. It's also as you scale and grow, team leaders and managers and other leaders in the organization can point to those values as here's how we decide a tough question. What fits our values better? The best story I have on this, and I think the best example of how we deal with this at Decimal is we had an intern this summer. And at the end of his internship, I wanted to give him an exit interview and learn like, hey, What did you learn working here? Like, how was your internship? How could we improve as a company? I think it's fascinating to ask young people with little experience, because it's kind of like out of the mouths of babes, you get better, more unfiltered thoughts. And he said, you know, I'm going back to business school this year, and I think I'm the only intern that's going to go back to school that could repeat the core values of the company they interned. And that's because you repeated them all the time. Your team repeats them all the time. When you give props or kudos to people, you highlight a key value, you talk about it with clients. Like, he goes, you just talk about it all the time. And I said, well, yeah, my job is chief repeating officer. And I think that those core values provide that true North Star. And ultimately too, like, we want to be good people that serve. And you can do that if you have values and a true North Star. And it's tough to do that if you don't.
I love that line, chief repeating officer. It reminds me of a conversation I had with Jeff Weiner, the former CEO of LinkedIn. That was something to that effect, where he would say that, you know, I think as CEO, I know that my job is to say things so many times that I get sick of hearing myself say them. The moment, the day that I start to feel irritated at myself for saying it, is probably the first day that somebody's actually going to remember it. You're beginning to allude to this with values. A big focus of your work and your podcast is on the role of company culture. Beyond stating what your values are and repeating them elsewhere, what tools do you use to create the culture at Decimal? And why is that so important to you, above and beyond the reasons you've already mentioned?
It's habits and artifacts that you help create culture. You can use tools like Slack. You can use tools like we've used Lattice in the past. And you can cycle through Notion and all of those things. But ultimately, it's the habits you build into a business. It's the same as the habits you build into your personal life. They are what you inevitably end up reflecting off. And so for us as a business, we've built a lot into creating a togetherness, even though we're remote. We do that through creating co-working sessions, daily stand-ups as teams, very frequent one-on-ones that we truly start to ask, not just how's work going, but like, how are you doing? If we're in an office, I can walk by you and I can see your body language. If you're remote, that's a lot tougher. And so you have to ask the questions and build a safe place where people are willing to give you answers as well as talk about it. We really try hard to continue to create and embody that type of a culture where we want to create a safe place and we want to be welcoming, but we also want to create a place where people are driven to improve and get better, where they're driven to serve. Because even though, you know, being a services business, creating a scope, hey, here's what we do and here's what we'll accomplish. We still want to make you feel like we're going above and beyond. We want to make you feel like we care about you and that we care about your business. A lot of that starts in the sales process of creating the right relationships and expectations, and then continuing that through the client journey. But as far as a team goes, creating that trust, creating that culture of togetherness, of working together, of truly caring and deeply understanding, I think is really important. I mean, we've had things where somebody on our Philippines team, their husband needed a heart surgery and they didn't have the money to pay for it. Somebody on our team started a GoFundMe campaign. And she was able to get the surgery for her husband. And it was amazing. You know, when people are out and sick and family members die or babies or whatever it is, people just lean in. We don't ask them to. It's what we do as a business, because that core value, number one, is do the right thing. Mm. And that's what it is. And so we build a lot into that, and we hire for that. We fire clients for that. Like, we really stick to that core culture. And I think that's a really, really important thing, because we also want to be a place where people enjoy working.
What is your hiring process, and how have you found, especially like you mentioned, we're not just talking about the fact that you have to do all of this remotely, but you're doing this across wildly different cultures. What does sifting for that in an interview process look like? What have you found that worked, and maybe what have you tried that didn't work?
A lot on both. You know, what's interesting, I'll throw an additional caveat in there, is we're in an industry where most other companies don't value what we do. And so it's a new thing for a lot of people that we hire. The thing that I've found is really important is you can attract a lot of bees with honey. And so one of the things we do in our hiring process is talk a lot about what you and I are talking about now, what our culture is, what our values are, what's important to us. And we find a lot of that weeds people out. You know, it's, hey, here's what we're going to expect from you. Here's how we're going to do it. And here's the mission and the culture that we're going to live by. And these aren't just words on paper, because in one of your first meetings with anybody from the company, you're hearing about it. And so we found that that weeds a lot of people out. The other thing that I just generally find is I think almost everybody has this in them. And it's just a matter of giving them the ability to bring it out. Peer pressure isn't always a bad thing. If you have a team that is always doing the right thing and always working hard, everybody else will catch up. And that is a good way to do peer pressure. Culture in general is contagious. And that's a big part of it. The other stuff, like we tried to do cultural interviews. We tried to do the like, what do you like and who are you? The problem is you build a lot of biases into anything. I'm convinced you can't unbias an interview process. It's like the masked singer is probably the only way you can unbias a process. But then if their voice sucks, you're biased. So yeah. Like you, no matter what, you can't unbias it, but you have to try. What you're trying to do and what we try to do at Decimal is we're not trying to create a homogenous organization. We're trying to create an organization that mimics society. Because we have business owners that come from all over the place. We have business owners that are all ages, all genders, all colors, all everything. We need to have a team that mimics that because that's what allows us to truly understand the clients that we serve. Right now we've hit about 1,000. I'd like to hit 100,000, which means we're going to continue to get more different. And that's cool. And so to me, really talking a lot about that, also talking about that we want people from different perspectives. We want people from different countries and different cultures. To be fair, in today's society, not everybody wants that. And so we find that we end up filtering people out simply by talking about what we value and who we are. And then a lot of the rest of the interview process of talking to references and trying to ask deeper questions on like, hey, give me an example when they went above and beyond. Like, how have they helped people out? Like, what are other things? And you're trying to ask some off the wall questions. Also, always trying to find a reference they didn't give you. Calling other people from a company like two companies ago. Hey, how was it to work for Thomas? What was it like to work with him? Really trying to see the full extent of a human being, I think is really important. Also, one of the hacks that we have is I've always valued responsiveness as one of the most important things we can do. Being highly responsive differentiates us. It also tells you a lot about a person on how responsive they are. And so we find during the interview process, when we ask people to hop on interviews or to accomplish some tasks, if they're highly responsive, that's good. If they're not responsive, they're probably not for us because we've already talked to them about the importance of responsiveness. So they didn't value what we talked about, what was important. And so we find little things like that help. And it's a fluid process that we don't do perfectly and we fail at a lot.
How do folks at Decimal view the world over the last 4 years?
The unique and nice thing about Decimal is we started in January of 2020. Wow. So chaos is our normal. And so we basically went through it all together and we grew a lot together. I kind of break it into three buckets of there's a pandemic. Nobody alive had dealt with a pandemic before. Number two, there was this free money. There was just a ton of money dumped into the economy that was effectively free. Yeah. And with zero interest rates, it was free money. And then you have exceptionally expensive money. And the hard thing is when you have that pendulum go all the way from one side to the other, it's impossible for businesses to slowly evolve and adapt to it. And so it was one shock to one shock to one shock. And I think it's been really hard on small businesses and different segments as well. A couple of the things that we have noticed. Number one, people that rely on other people's cash have struggled the most. And that can be tech companies fundraising. That can be construction firms with high-priced raw materials, as well as expensive cash for liens and lending, businesses that just need money to grow. Those are the companies that have struggled the most because my dad would say, gosh, interest rates today are less half of what they were when I started my company. I don't understand. And I'm like, well, the problem is when you budgeted for 1% interest and now it's at 7%, like your whole budget's messed up. And so like mentally, it's a break. So I think that's been really hard. I think in general, what we've also seen is this year in our client base, payroll is down 8%. So that means for all of these small businesses in a variety of industries, and if you reapply inflation cost adjustments as well, it's really down about 10, 11%. So that means spanning our client base of small to mid-sized businesses, payroll is down about 10%. I don't necessarily think that a lot of that is cuts and termination. I think what it is when somebody leaves, you don't refill the position. And I think you're seeing more and more of that. And it's kind of a slow, unknown contraction. And to be fair, I think a lot of us around small businesses, I've been joking a little bit on LinkedIn that I follow Fed minutes and economic updates like I used to follow March Madness basketball scores. Yeah. Like I'm up there and I'm like, what's going on? Like, what are they saying? Not only what did they do this time, what's it look like they're going to do in the future? Like, I'm glad we didn't see the economic crash that some people thought we were going to. I also think things are worse than people are talking about, because I think there's a lot of fear baked into business owners right now because we've seen so many swings. I don't think mentally we're expecting normal. I think mentally we're waiting for the next shoe to drop. And I think that's just it. I hope we get to a point of normal. I'm not sure what Decimal and my team would do with it. It's a brand new thing we'll have to all learn how to do together. But I do think that that's where people are. Everybody's kind of on the edge of their seat waiting and wondering for what's next. And what doesn't make it easier is an election. And it doesn't matter what your political opinions are, the election is a risky moment for the country. And so that's why until we get through, to be fair, it used to be till we get through November. Now it's going to be, can we get through January 6th? Yeah. And once we get through January 6th, people will be like, okay, now I can prepare for what the next 4 years will be like. Yeah. And as long as the economy stops spiking, we might be able to get to a true normal, no matter what happens and who wins. And I think that's a lot of it.
If you're giving advice to a business owner who's kind of been around for 15, 20 years, and so for whom the last 5 years actually, they do feel kind of paralyzed by them. What are some of the things that you guys learned, never having the benefit of the stable time, so to speak, that you might be able to pour back as wisdom, whose particular business may have been around a little longer?
One of the things I started this year is I looked at my organization and I said, you know, one of the things that we could continue to do better is to coach our team to the next level. And so what I started doing is I now have a monthly meeting with every management layer of the company and we solve problems together. It's coaching without a classroom. And I think coaching me taking hours out of my month, be fair, it gives me intense joy to do it. I love every aspect of it. But I think coaching your team to the next level improves everybody along the way. It allows your team to push up and improve down. And I think that that's a big thing that a lot of businesses don't do a lot of is think about training as coaching. Let me coach you to be your next role. Even if you don't get it, it benefits you to understand how to solve problems like that. There's a difference. Just had this with team leads yesterday. There's a difference between being a manager and a leader. There's a lot of nuance baked into that statement, but let's learn what it means to be a manager. And then I'll teach you what it means to be a leader, and we'll really explore the differences. And so that's one thing that I think is really, really important. Two, I think, is we quarterly spend a lot of time breaking down our assumptions. What assumptions do we have in growth? What assumptions do we have in cost? What assumptions do we have in culture? How do we break those down? We create habits around regularly breaking those down. And I think what that does is it gives us the ability to check the box and say, hey, this is good for now, or hey, this is some area to focus improvement, because no organization is static. It is either improving or it's degrading. And it may degrade slowly, but you need to constantly be looking at improving the organization, and in doing so in a very intentional and habitual way.
Based on your experience over the last kind of 5 years at Decimal, what do you find yourself feeling most excited about as you look ahead to the next 2 to 3 years? And perhaps maybe thinking about your goal of 100,000 clients. And what do you find yourself feeling most afraid of?
So I have two things that I'm really excited about. And one of them is also what I'm most scared about. And we've been talking about it. I think the economy is something that I'm excited and scared about. I'm excited because it would be great to have 2 or 3 or 4 years of just solid up and to the right, even if it's just a little bit. Like, it would be nice to reestablish a new normal that wasn't such a pendulum swing, but I'm worried on if that's going to happen or what it would look like. The thing I'm most excited about, I would say, unashamedly, is I truly think that we are at a point in technology that is transformational. I'm 40 years old. I remember having to carry a cord 3 rooms down to have a phone call, let alone cell phones and a whole computer in my pocket. I think the advent and integration of AI into our daily lives is going to have a more dramatic change and impact on business and on our lives than any other technology we've seen, and probably all the rest of them combined. I think what that does for people, I think that what that does for businesses is way yet to be determined, but I think is exceptionally exciting. And I think it's also one of those things that you can't put your head in the sand on. You have to figure out how you're going to deal with it personally. And to me, as a company, we made the decision, one of our big missions and goals next year is that we are going to be on the very tip of the spear, the very forefront of integrating AI into accounting. We're in an industry where people traditionally change. I think slow would be a nice way to put it. And we're going to do it way faster. And we're going to try to do it in a way that is inclusive and helps to bring other people that want to join in. And we're going to announce some big partnerships in the next year that will, in the next couple of months, that will, I think, really demonstrate that. But to me, that's what I'm most excited about, is we're staring down the next industrial revolution. And what is that going to mean?
I love that. My last set of questions is really around who you are as a whole person. You earlier alluded to the beauty of law school and how it allowed you to find your wife, and so your gratitude there. One of the big challenges for business owners, no matter what stage you're at, startup, messy middle, enterprise, is that the work is never done. Everyone has their own answer to how they figure out how they want to service all the other roles they have in life. Parent, partner, child, community member. And that changes over time. What does that look like for you right now? And why is that working? And perhaps how might that change as you go forward?
So this is something I've spent a lot of time on. Best thing that I did for myself was I realized 7 or 8 years ago that I was a different person with my kids, different person with my wife, and a different person at work. And I was just putting different facades on. I merged all of those into one. And I am the exact same person with my kids as I am at work. Try to cuss a little bit less because it's a better example for them. But that is my authentic self. I truly believe that there's good in the world. I truly believe that people are good. But I also have that Reaganism in me of like trust and verify. I think that's who I am. I like balancing things. I like that my kids see me work because I want them to understand what hard work is. I like my work to see that I take a break and spend time with my kids because I want them to see what balance looks like. And I think all of that goes together. I fail miserably at it. I wear so many hats, and I'll go through weeks where I'm like, gosh, I was a terrible spouse this week. Other times I snap at my kids because I was tired. Other times I don't pay attention enough to my team. Giving myself grace for that and being okay failing and being okay just trying to improve. The other thing is just talking about it, getting it out there. I love having a coach. I love having a peer group that I can talk to and empathize with. And then I do take very specific time every day to be selfish and focus on my mental health, my physical health. And I think that's given me some semblance of balance.
And that wraps up today's episode with Matt. We delved into the challenges of building a business, the importance of fostering company culture, and why prioritizing mental health is key to sustainable leadership. A huge thank you to Matt for sharing his journey and insights with us today. Now, if you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your network. And before we go, I'm going to make a mention about my new podcast, People and Possibilities, where we explore the future of work, leadership, and AI. If you're interested in learning more, be sure to check it out. Thank you, as always, for tuning into Venture Visionaries. Your time is precious, and I'm grateful that you've chose to share some of it with me. Until next time, keep building your vision and making your impact.